few weeks ago, I had a sermon in which I was talking about marriage, and I brought up Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 1, talking about how children ought to obey their parents. And I mentioned that that this included adult children. And I had several people come to me and say, that's not quite right. Well, I decided to study it a little bit and realized it was a little bit more complicated than I thought. So I want to apologize to those, to you. And first of all, this is just evidence that I'm a fallible man and can get things wrong. And I thank those who came to me and told me about that. It is a good deal more complicated. What we can take from that passage, however, is that we must honor our parents, honor our mother and our father, and make sure that they are taken care of when they are less able to take care of themselves. And that is the point, I think, especially of Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4. I bring that up right now today because of the topic that we are looking at this morning. And this is the idea of parenting like a person, parenting like Solomon. Now, his son didn't exactly turn out right. Rehoboam, as we see later on in 1 Kings. But we do see that the principles that are presented here in the book of Proverbs are principles that we must follow. Solomon was not a perfect man, but he was the wisest man ever to have lived, aside from Jesus, of course. And because he was the wisest man ever to have lived, he wrote a couple books. And I'm certainly grateful for that. And we are going to look at some of those things today. While the book of Proverbs is a book of truisms, things that are true generally speaking, it's not a book of absolutes. When it says in Proverbs chapter 20, chapter 22, verse 6, train up a child in the way he shall go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it, that is not 100% true. Not every child is going to be like that. But it's a general truth. Most children, if you teach them the way that they should go, it's a sure bet that they will not depart from it when they get older. You know, in terms of my own personal experience, I've only been a parent for almost 3 years. Caroline, next Monday, turns 3 years old. And so that's, we're looking forward to that. But with my own experience, with my own kids, I have had some, but I've also had experience with my niece and nephews. The oldest one that I've dealt with right now is, 13? He's a teenager, his birthday is next month, actually. So he'll be 14, I guess, soon. Thank you. Not only that, but I've taught teen class several times, and I've taught in school, in a public school setting before, and boy, that's rough. 20 to 30 kids, dealing with them, trying to wrangle them. It's like herding cats sometimes. But not only high school, but in all ages, I've dealt with that kind of thing. Whatever the case, I've also spoken to many parents and grandparents about some of the best ways to parent, because that's what I often do, and maybe you do this too, is before I embark on something that I consider very important, I get as much advice as I can from as many people as I can to help me make the best decisions whenever I go into that. When I got married, that was a big decision. When I had kids, that was a big undertaking. When I decided to be a preacher, I talked with many preachers to try to understand what it takes and whether or not that was something I wanted to do. Since this is a book of truisms, it must be noted that it is conceivable that parents do everything right, yet the child still goes astray. As I mentioned, Solomon, his son Rehoboam, didn't exactly live up to his father's teachings. Of course, we're not exactly sure what happened in that home, but we do know that Rehoboam was righteous at first for a little while, and then he went astray. Your job as a parent, however, because, you know, ultimately, the child has their own free will, right? They have, especially when they get to a certain age, they have their own personal responsibility that will determine whether or not they are Christians and they remain faithful. Your job as a parent is to make heaven an easier choice for your child. That is your job as a parent, to guide them and to make sure that they understand what it takes to be a Christian and that that choice will be easier for them. Teach them things like self-control. Teach them things about the Bible. Teach them certain things that they need to know. Now, when a child is conceived, you know, when my wife was pregnant with Caroline, I was asked to write an article about in the Carolina Messenger about infant baptism. And the thing I started off with that article was just how much the idea of raising a child weighed on me. Because what that is, I am responsible for bringing a life into the world. Not only am I responsible for bringing a life into the world, but I have a certain amount of time to make sure that that life goes to heaven. Have I just created, with the Lord's help, obviously I don't create souls, but have I just been responsible for bringing a soul into the world that will spend an eternity in hell? That was a thought that weighed heavily on my mind. When I told myself I was going to do everything that I could to make sure that didn't happen, to make sure I was going to bring a child up that would spend an eternity with our Lord in heaven. You and your mate are responsible for bringing life into the world. And you are largely responsible for where that soul goes. There is, of course, I mentioned earlier, personal responsibility, but you as a parent play a pivotal role in that. There are some stats on the faithfulness of a child. If both parents are Christians and are faithful, the child, and all things being equal, the child is 72% likely to remain faithful himself. If only the father is faithful, it drops down a little bit to 55%. If only the mother is faithful, it drops significantly to 15%. And if no children are faithful, it drops to 6%. That's sobering, isn't it? How important are parents in the child's life? How important is the father in the child's life for remaining a Christian? Have you created one more soul for heaven or for hell? You may not feel like that this particular lesson applies to you. And many of you are parents, but your parents, your children are grown. Perhaps some of you, you may not have children, but you may one day. Before I was married, I would also often listen to sermons like this and be like, oh, I got to keep that in mind. Before I got married, I would listen to sermons on marriage and say, oh, I need to remember this. I need to keep this in mind. This is the passage I need to go to learn about how to be a husband. And this is for parenting sermons. This is the passage I needed to go to learn about being a father. If your children are grown, as is the case for many of you, you may have grandchildren, and you can still help and guide your grown children, but also deal with your grandchildren whenever they're with you, whenever you're watching them. And if you have no intentions of having children, sometimes God surprises you. But if that's still the case, you must be mindful of those who do. Don't judge too harshly those who discipline their kids in front of you. You might also teach or babysit at the same time. And you have to be able to learn some of these rules, some of these truisms. So we're going to look at several questions today that we can look at in the book of Proverbs. Why should we train up a child? How should we train them up? When should we correct them? What will be the result of the correction, and who else will benefit? These are questions. All of them are answered in the book of Proverbs. Solomon answers these very questions. So why should we train up a child? Proverbs chapter 22, verse 15. Well, the first thing is, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. Now, I think we know this intuitively, because how often does a child do something foolish? And you might not think about it necessarily, but how about, especially when my daughter was really young, how many times do you think she picked something up and put it in her mouth? And it wasn't a good thing to pick up. How many times do they play with a power socket? That's why we have these guards on our outlets here, to protect not them, but to protect our kids from playing with them. How many times do they do something, perhaps walking toward the street, if you have a house that's near the road? How often do they do that? You've got to be careful about that kind of thing. They do foolish things. You know, they are silly and they are adorable, but they don't know right from wrong yet. They just don't. They don't know what's safe and what isn't. It's your job to teach them. So foolishness is bound up in the heart of the child. At the same time, Proverbs chapter 29, verse 15, the latter half of that verse says that a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. You know, do children pitch fits? That's a silly question, isn't it? Because the answer to that is, of course they do. I don't care how good your child is, they're going to pitch a fit at some point, perhaps at many points. Perhaps you have seen a child pitch a fit when they don't get their way. Perhaps you've been that parent. Well, what happens when the child eventually does get their way? They pitch that fit and they say, oh, I want this, I want that. And then eventually you relent and you give in. What are you teaching that child? You're teaching that child that pitching a fit is how they get their way. That's what you're doing. One of the things that we've decided as parents is that if the children, one or both of them, need to be taken out of the worship service, what are we going to do? Are we going to let them play in the room back there? No, because they want to play back there. My wife used a phrase last week when we talked about this. She said, it's worse for them back there than it is in here. In here, they're able to eat snacks, look at books, look at the songbook, have some quiet toys that they might be able to play with. But back there, I'm not back there often enough to know exactly what happens, but I'd imagine that they will have to sit still until they're quiet. So that's one example. We are also teaching Caroline that if she wants something, we have to tell her, how do you ask? How do you ask if you want something? You know, and she, of course, has to ask politely. I want her to say how to ask politely. I want her to do that, even if the answer is no. Because politeness, because courtesy should not depend on whether or not you get your way. You should always be courteous and kind. These things, along with being consistent with them, will help shape our children so that they will not bring us shame. When he is old, another reason why we need to do this is that when he is old, he will not depart from his training. As we're training up our children, will they falter? Oh, yeah. They will fail. They'll mess up. They'll color on the walls. They will, when they get old enough, they might wreck your car. Who knows? They might do all sorts of things. As we're training up our child, they will falter. But as they get older, that training is going to kick in. They'll realize, yeah, my mom told me about this. My dad told me I needed to do this particular thing. And when they get older, they'll realize, hey, my parents weren't as dumb as we thought they were. Because that's how teenagers sometimes think. I'll be honest, okay, that's how I thought as a teenager. While it may not be true 100% of the time, it's definitely true most of the time. So let's make living as a Christian easier for our kids to be. All right, how should we train them? How should we train them? Proverbs chapter 22, verse 15, the latter half, says, "The rod of correction will drive foolishness far from him." You ever heard the phrase, beat the fool out of him? Maybe you've used it. I don't know. But, you know, I'm not talking about any kind of abuse, of course. Certainly not. We don't want to abuse our children or hurt them needlessly. But this is talking about the rod of correction. This is talking about what we might consider corporal punishment. This is talking about spanking. Of course, we can't take it too far into the realm of abuse. We don't need to spank for every infraction, everything they do wrong, but pain does have a way of keeping a child in line, keeping them doing what they need to do and have that proper attitude, how they should be. An alternative that works, and I encourage you, if you can find an alternative, to use it, because you don't need to spank all the time, but an alternative that works for Caroline, and I am just amazed every time it does, is counting. All I have to do is say one, and then she automatically does what she's supposed to do. I could be telling her until I'm blue in the face to do something, and she doesn't do anything, and I, you know, but then I start counting, and she goes and does it. That's amazing. I don't know how that works. And hopefully that'll work with our son too. Whatever the case, that is a good alternative. She might not know what the consequence is by the time I get to a certain number and she doesn't do it, but the consequence to it is implied. She knows that if she doesn't comply by a certain point, she won't like the outcome. The trick, of course, is finding what works with your child and what, and then using it. Because oftentimes, spanking doesn't work. And if it doesn't work for your child, then you got to find something else. That's the nature of training, right? Train up a child in the way he should go. It's like, have you ever tried to grow grapes? They have the vines that you have, and they kind of go all over the place. Unless you take the vine and you train it up to the trellis, you train it up to the wire that you might have there, or the board, and you try to get it up there to get it so that it wraps around that and then it grows. You train that grapevine just as we need to train our children in the right direction, get them where they need to be. You know, discipline is not supposed to be pleasant. Discipline is not supposed to be pleasant. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 11 says that very thing, that chastising, you know, is not pleasant at the moment. That kind of punishment is not pleasant at the moment. And that's very true. We need to be careful to recognize that, so that if they are going the wrong way and we need to correct them, that we recognize that they're not going to like it. So as a result, we've got to get them in that right way. Have you ever heard the phrase? Again, you might have used it. This hurts me more than it hurts you. Well, that's the right attitude. We shouldn't resort to spanking every time. If it hurts me too, I'm not going to overdo it, right? I'm only going to do it when it's necessary, when I've got to do it. All right, next, Proverbs, there it is. Chastening is painful at first. Proverbs chapter 29, verse 15, the first half. The rod and rebuke give wisdom. The rod and rebuke give wisdom. Now, is this talking about any rod and rebuke? No, because if that happens, that could cause more harm than good. It's not just the rod alone. You can't say, "Oh, I'm gonna spank the kid and that's it. He'll learn his lesson." That doesn't always happen that way. But wisdom comes by rebuke as well. The reason for using the rod must be given for it to have the proper effect. You can't just spank a child and expect them to know right from wrong. You've got to tell them what they've done wrong. Make sure that they understand it so that they can learn from that experience. They need to be able to associate the deed with the consequence. But if you spank for just anything, or perhaps too harsh with your words, you're in danger of violating Colossians 3:21. What does Colossians 3:21 say? Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. What happens when a child becomes discouraged? If we punish them improperly, there is that possibility of discouraging our child. If they never please you, they're going to stop trying. If you never express that you're proud of them or that you're happy that they did a particular thing, they're going to stop trying. They'll be discouraged. They're going to stop trying to please you and just do their own thing. You know, it's a natural desire for children to please their parents. So praise them when they do good. You must, of course, find that balance with your children. To be firm but gentle, to use the rod when necessary. How does one get that wisdom? How does one get that wisdom? So when I mention any rod or any rebuke, where does that rebuke come from? In 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 5, we note that Timothy had his mother Eunice and his grandmother Lois, who were faithful people, who were teaching Timothy about how to be a righteous man. And then in chapter 3, verse 15, we note that he says, from childhood you have been taught the scriptures that are able to make one wise for salvation through Jesus. So, through this, through the scriptures, taught by his mother and his grandmother, he was able to do this. These women taught him the scriptures, no doubt using the rod and the rebuke from God's word to make him wise for salvation. Wisdom also comes from mentioned in James chapter 1 and verse 5. Wisdom also comes by prayer. So parents, pray that you will have the wisdom to raise your children, but also pray that your children will be wise as well. We want them to be wise, don't we? Does God take any pleasure in fools? Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 4 or 5, somewhere around there. No, he doesn't. We want our children to make wise choices so that they can be in heaven one day. James 1, 5 says, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally without reproach, and it will be given to him. Let us pray. Let us pray. Next, when should we correct them? Proverbs chapter 13, verse 24, the latter half. He who loves his son disciplines him promptly. Not tomorrow, not next week, promptly. Sometimes it's not feasible to properly discipline your child at the moment that they do something wrong. Perhaps you're in a store in a very public place and you just can't punish them in the right way. There's just so many possibilities. You can't punish them at that very moment, at least not like you ought to. But here we read that we shouldn't delay it for too long. Perhaps you might have said, just wait till we get home. Just you wait till we get home. See what happens. We might say, we often say, well, I will say anyway, when we get home, I'm going to have to punish you. We're specific with that. This is what's going to happen when we get home because of this. When we get home, guess what happens? They get punished. Remember, it's time for your punishment. Solomon also wrote what happens when one is not disciplined promptly. In Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verse 11, because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. Now that's talking about a sentence in terms of some kind of civil crime or something of that nature, a crime in some way. But that's true with our kids as well. If we don't execute judgment speedily, then they're going to think, oh, hey, there's nothing going to happen for what I did, so I might as well just keep doing it. They're going to think that whatever they did is acceptable. Great, I'll keep going because nothing bad's happened. The connection to the deed and the consequence is not made. He who spares his son, he who spares his rod hates his son. He who spares his rod hates his son. At the same time, if we do not discipline our children, do we really love them? I'm sure everybody loves their kids. It's unnatural not to love your kids. But in order to truly show that, they've got to be disciplined. Because again, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. If you don't correct them and teach them wisdom through the rod and rebuke, then they're going to continue to be foolish. They're not going to be able to make it in society. They're not going to be, let alone be Christians. I'm sure we all love our kids, but we must show it by doing what's best for them. Next, you must chasten your son while there is hope. Proverbs chapter 19, verse 18. I knew a man once who became a Christian later in life after his children were grown, and he heard a lesson similar to this. And he asked the teacher at the time, you know, my grown kids are not faithful. What can I do now? Didn't have the heart to tell him at that moment, later, since I wasn't the teacher at the time. But the answer, far less than you could have done when they were younger. And that's an unfortunate truth. That is an unfortunate truth. The younger they are, the easier a course correction can be made. That doesn't mean that there is no hope when they are older. Of course, there's always hope. While one breathes, there is hope. But it does mean that there isn't as much as when they're younger. It's kind of like a ship that's gone off course. I know some of you have been pilots and have done things like this, but have you ever gone a certain direction and you're just a little bit off course? And you got to make it to that your destination. So you notice it early on, and you realize, oh, I've got to make a course correction, and it's a small course correction. That happens earlier on. But what happens if you don't notice it, or you delay in making that course correction? You keep going in that wrong direction. The course correction you've got to make is much bigger to get to your destination. And that's the same with us. That is the same with us. If we don't correct our children when they're young, it's going to be so much harder to train them up as they get older. And for some of us, that's an unfortunate truth. Keep working on your adult children if they're not where they need to be. But if you have young children, try all the more. Finally, do not withhold correction from a child. Do not withhold correction from a child. Proverbs chapter 23, verse 13. You know, it feels like we've already covered this, so I'm going to just going to say a couple things about it. There should not be a time when they aren't corrected in some way for doing something wrong. Think about this. If you set a boundary, you must not let them cross it without consequences. If you set a boundary, they must not cross it without consequences. Because if you let them go all over the boundaries that you set, they're going to think, oh, I don't have to really listen to what they say. I can do whatever I want. Make sure when you set boundaries, you stick to it. Stick to it. And the corollary of that, of course, is don't make boundaries you don't have no intention of keeping. That's something that I had to learn when I was teaching school. Oh, man. Those kids will walk right all over you if you don't keep that, if you don't keep those boundaries that you've set. And that's the case with little kids as well, and every child. When the child wins, the child really loses. When the child wins that argument, that discussion, whatever you're having, they really lose in the long run, don't they? They really lose. You are the parent. You set the rules. You need to win. Finally, what will be the result of correction? Proverbs 23:13. This is probably a verse I laugh at every time I read it. If you beat him with a rod, he will not die. Very nice. So here is a negative. What will be the result? Well, he won't die. You know, it's true. When a child is punished, they may holler and scream. And you might use this verse to assure you that you're not really killing your child. But really, I think this verse is informing you, or informing us, that such correction can save a child's life. Can't it? Yes, even his very soul. The penalty for certain sins in the Old Testament time was death. So correcting your child could prevent them from this sentence. Just look at Leviticus chapter 24, verses 10 through 16. A young man is executed for blaspheming. Could you imagine someone getting that happening today? But we certainly know for today that such correction could prevent our children from the second death, from hell. And it might just prevent them from doing something that could kill them. There are plenty of things in this world that such a waste of life. Drunk driving. Getting hooked on drugs. Things of that nature. Overdosing. These things are terrible. And our parenting could help prevent something like that. Proverbs 19, verse 18b. Do not set your heart on his destruction. Do not set your heart on his destruction. And the idea there, well, first off, the idea here is literally, do not set your heart to put him to death. That's what it literally means. A reference to the death penalty for certain sins of the time. This is what happens when we fail to chasten our children while there is hope. When we fail to punish them and do what needs to be done. If we wait too long, destruction awaits. And Proverbs 23:14. You shall beat him with a rod and deliver his soul from hell. That's the New King James. That word hell is the Hebrew word sheol, which can be translated as Hades in the New Testament and the grave in other versions. You are saving his soul from death, from the grave. In other words, such discipline can prevent your child from death. Of course, we must take care of his physical needs. That's what we do. In the 9 months or so, when we realize that we're going to have a baby, you have that amount of time to realize, okay, to plan everything out. Okay, here's the nursery. Here's the baby shower. Here's all the things that we need to get. Here is my mindset, trying to understand what it means to be a parent, panicking over it because you just aren't sure what's going to happen. And you want to make sure you do things right. But do we think about their spiritual needs as well? We think about their physical needs, make sure they have enough food, a place to sleep. But we also need to take care of their spiritual needs. That doesn't mean that we are to spank them harshly and frequently without cause. But it does mean, in light of the other verses that we've looked at this morning, that we should not shy away from it when it's needed. The writer of Hebrews tells us the result. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 11b. Afterward, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. Peaceable fruit of righteousness. So next, and finally, who else will benefit? Who else benefits? Proverbs 29:17. Make sure I'm going to look at all these. Proverbs 29:17, Proverbs 23:24, Proverbs 23:25. Correct your son, and he will give you rest. Yes, he will be a delight to your soul. The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice, and he who begets a wise child will delight in him. Let your father and your mother be glad, and let her who bore you rejoice. Who else will benefit? You as a parent will benefit from it. It's not just the child's benefit, but yours as well. Life is easier if your child is well-disciplined, isn't it? Life is so much easier. Isn't it exhausting? I mentioned before telling my kid how to do something 15 times before they actually do it. But isn't it exhausting to do that? To tell your kid 100 times or so, and they still don't listen? I start counting. In fact, the strange truth about it is, and it's kind of counterintuitive almost, but children secretly love discipline. They love structure. They thrive in it. They want to be disciplined. And some of the kids in here will be like, speak for yourself. But it's true. It's a strange thing to consider, but it's true. Remember, you have to fight them to get to that point sometimes. Remember, if the kid wins, they lose. If the kid wins the argument, if they do that, then they ultimately lose. Our older child is about to turn 3, as I mentioned before. And once I heard someone say that anyone who has used the term terrible twos has never had a 3-year-old. So take whatever I say with that, a bit of experience in mind. But at the same time, whatever the scriptures say. Whatever the case, I look forward to that challenge and pray that the foundation that we've set thus far will guide her as she gets older, and that we can do the same for our son as he turns 2 in a few months. The hard work we've put into raising our children will pay off, and it is paying off. That's what it means to beget a wise child. You know, you might think, oh, but if you beget a wise child, that doesn't make any sense. Earlier it says that foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. Yeah, it is. But if you've done your job as a parent, if you've used the rod and rebuke from God's word, if you've prayed for them, then they will get that wisdom. They will get that wisdom and become a wise child. And then we will delight in them. We will be glad. We will rejoice. You know, parenting is not easy. But God did give us some outlines. This is the outline of the lesson. I'm not going to go over it exactly, but you can look at that and try to get an idea of what we've talked about today. Parenting is not easy, but God did give us some guidelines. People often say that children don't come with a manual. Well, first, there are plenty of books on parenting. There are. But, as I mentioned earlier, I made a little mistake this morning. I was a bit fallible, or I admitted to a mistake this morning. But what's truly infallible is this. And certainly, the guidelines that are talked about in here can be our manual for parenting our children and taking care of our grandchildren and whatever else. Let us follow these Proverbs, and our homes will be in such better shape. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 12 says, "For the Lord, for whom the Lord loves, he corrects." Hebrews chapter 12, verse 6 quotes that again and says, "For whom the Lord loves, he chastens." He corrects, he punishes us because he loves us. If you love your child, you're going to correct them. You're going to do right by them. You cannot, but before we can move on past that, before we can actually do that, you can't really guide your children to heaven if you're not on your way there yourself. You can't guide your children to heaven if you're not on your way yourself. So, if you need to obey the gospel, if you need to get right with God, you have a chance to do that this morning. If you need to put the Lord on in baptism, if you need to show your faith in him and make sure that your soul is secure so that you can get to heaven one day, you have that chance to do that right now so that your children can see that example and you can raise them up in the training and admonition of the Lord, Ephesians 6:4. Please, if you have a need this morning, come forward as we stand and as we sing.